This is an ABC podcast.
This is the WA Country Hour on ABC Radio WA.
Good afternoon, Georgia Hargreaves here with you for the Country Hour today, broadcasting to you live from Karratha. Now, very shortly, you're going to hear from the new president of the Pastoralist and Graziers Association, Digby Stretch, who's going to be sharing his vision for the direction of the PGA next year. And the state's main grain handler has broken the record for grain receivals. CBH's Mick Dore will be joining us very shortly to chat about it. Stay tuned. Six past 12 on the Country Hour. Now, on the program yesterday, you heard from James Brown, whose Pearl Farm at Cygnet Bay was in the direct path of ex-tropical cyclone Hayley. It was an anxious wait for the third-generation Pearl Farmer before the cyclone made landfall at about 5 p.m. yesterday on the Dampier Peninsula. He says his team is still assessing the damage.
They're out there now, actually just trying to clear the road so that we can get around and assess everything. But, you know, there's definitely some damage. Even the structures sort of immediately outside the shelter they were in have sustained roof damage, and there's obviously trees down everywhere, as everyone's probably already seen. So, yeah, there's a fair bit, but it'll take us, you know, take us days to really, I guess, get around everywhere and figure it all out.
I was going to ask you about that. I mean, how long will it take to fully assess what damage there is? Because the Cygnet Bay Pearl Farm, it's quite a large operation, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, just, you know, even the roads up there, there's a fair few kilometres of roads that, you know, we need to get the heavy machinery out to clear the trees and such so that we can actually get around the property. And then, of course, you know, once we can clear the roads, then we can get the boats out to actually get out to the farm and start having a look out there. So it'll be a little while. It's only that main farm in Cygnet Bay that is, you know, has probably seen any real issue from this event. The farms we've got around Broome should be fine, thankfully.
What sort of impact does an event like this have on the Pearls? I mean, you know, like you've got the farms around there at Cygnet Bay. What sort of impact will it have on those, or there's just no way of knowing?
Oh, look, until we get out there, it's hard to know. I mean, hopefully all your long lines are still in place, you know, near the floating infrastructure. But because of the direction this came, you know, most of the wind was coming over the peninsula before it got to us. So, you know, it was relatively sheltered in the King Sound for the first front end of it until the eye passed, and then the wind would have swung around to a different direction. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that most of the actual farm infrastructure will be okay. It's the things like the, you know, the bigger vessels on cyclone moorings and the other vessels that are tied up and lashed down and all the rest of it. If any of those have actually moved or sustained any damage, then, you know, that could take us a fair while to actually get those repaired before we can get back onto the farm and start really doing the maintenance we need to do. So, fingers crossed. It's sort of, you know, various steps. We're at step one, clear the roads. Step two, make sure the boats are all good. Well, step one, of course, is make sure everyone's okay, but we knew that all night. And once we've got boats back in the water and the crew out there, we'll start really getting a sense of how everything in the water fared.
You mentioned your staff, and I know that most of your staff were evacuated, but there was a few that did remain behind. And they are okay? You just said that they are?
Yeah, we were able to stay in constant communication the entire time, which is really fortuitous. You know, we just had the whole management team and the team on the ground communicating constantly, really, just so everyone knew exactly what was going on and sharing any updates as they came through. It was, you know, in some ways it was good that the system sped up and crossed it earlier than expected. And so it meant that the people out there could actually see what was going on around them as the wind really picked up and peaked, as opposed to just, you know, hearing it in the dark. Would have been a little bit more daunting. But everyone, you know, everyone, including the surrounding communities, you know, a lot of people were streaming it live on Facebook. It was quite interesting to see just how many people were still up there and you know, different parts of the peninsula. Streaming a cyclone live, that's the modern world we're in, I guess.
But, it is the modern world, isn't it?
Yeah, they obviously they couldn't get out you know, to have a look around. It was still pretty savage when it did go dark. So we didn't really know, but our main village power, we know that stayed on all night, which is really great. So, you know, most of our sort of key essential services seem to be okay at this stage.
James Brown is the Managing Director of Cygnet Bay Pearl Farm, which is on the tip of the Dampier Peninsula in the Kimberley. He was speaking this morning with Kelly Gudgeon after ex-tropical cyclone Hayley crossed the Kimberley coast at about 5 o'clock yesterday afternoon as a severe Category 3 system. The Bureau of Meteorology says the cyclone is now located over the western Kimberley and will keep moving eastwards today as it weakens. But of course, stay tuned because we will get a more detailed update from the Bureau at around 12:30. Now, I can't believe I'm saying it, but it's the last day of the year. Wow. Things have flown. Now, I've got the new president of the Pastoralist and Graziers Association, Digby Stretch, here. Digby, yesterday we heard from a 2025 recap from WA Farmers CEO Trevor Whittington, focusing mostly on sheep and grain farming in the Southwest Land Division. What's your take on how this year went for cattle producers and pastoralists across the state?
2025, an improvement in pricing, but it would certainly be a bit of a patchwork as far as seasonal conditions. The certain areas of the Pilbara and Gascoyne have been really looking forward to a good wet. There's some tough country out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully there is rain on the way for those regions in the north. Now, Tony Seabrook was president of the PGA for 11 years, and now you've stepped into this role, Digby. Is it a bit daunting?
Look, it's daunting. It's exciting. It's a whole bunch of things that I'm really looking forward to. And some of the things I've really enjoyed so far have just been chewing the fat with people from various organisations as to how they go about their business and what they do, and how we can best represent their interests and the interests of rural WA.
Now, there's obviously a question mark hanging over the PGA whilst the financial investigation is underway. I imagine that might make it difficult to attract members whilst that's ongoing. Do you think the organisation is doomed?
Oh, no, I don't. What's been really interesting about this has been the support that we've had from our members in coming on and getting in behind us, an incredible amount of hard work that we've done in reorganising our finances and our governance structures over this year. And it's been, it's an unfortunate analogy, but it's a bit like having a bushfire go through. It's absolutely tragic, daunting, and everything at once as it happens. But once the dust has settled, you've actually got a clear slate to reorganise your fencing and reorganise your infrastructure. And that's what we've done. And so we've treated the crisis as an opportunity. And I think you're going to see some exciting steps forward from the PGA coming up.
Yeah, so as the new president, what are your plans for the PGA in 2026?
We want to seriously appeal to the young movers and shakers, the doers, the people that are in their prime in agriculture, in their 30s and 40s and 50s. Well, I know they've got young families and they're busy and they're doing things, but if you don't get involved in the creation of policy and guiding of government regulations and so forth while you're in there farming, well, it's a shame to come in there later on and not have farmed under those changes that you made. So we're trying to shape the PGA to reflect how business is so busy, how people's time is so limited, and make it easy for them to contribute in policy development.
So how do you go about appealing to those younger farmers? Because as you say, they are juggling a lot. They do have very busy lives.
Well, I've been involved in the PGA since, I got cranked in pretty hard in the early 90s when we were being belted apart with the wool market support scheme, and realised if we didn't stand up and change it, I was going to be farming for 30 years under a really ordinary set of circumstances as I went through my farming career. So we're organising, so if anyone wants to work on a PGA committee, they don't need to be driving up and down the highway and losing a full day from their business. We're embracing Zoom and Teams technology so we can go online and do it. and we can move our policy and decisions by circular email. We've done a whole lot of work in the governance space there, so that we can move hard and fast and don't have to rely on the next time people are available to go and take a day out of their life and drive to Perth and back.
It's the beauty of remote technology, isn't it? What have you got going on at the moment at your place in Kojonup?
We've got about a week of harvest to go. We're just onto oats at the moment. Lambs are all weaned. They're all looking forward to the last of the stubbles coming out. And, it's looking quite good. We've had an extraordinarily, it seems like an extraordinarily wet winter. It was only about 3 or 4 inches over our long-term average. But it was almost hydroponic. We went through July, August and September with no more than 4 days between a rainfall registration for 12 weeks. So things were a bit wet. It tested everything out. But we've got a fantastic subsoil supply. We've recharged our freshwater soaks. We've siphoned salt water out of the bottom of a lot of key dams. We've had some good opportunities.
Oh, that's fantastic news. Great to hear. And look, it is New Year's Eve. Have you got any big plans to celebrate? Not going to be staying farmers, up till midnight.
Look, for the mixed farmers down this part of the world where you're still harvesting and you've got a bunch of sheep on, it'll be a reasonably quiet one. But I know, we've got our thoughts and our thoughts and hearts are out for a bunch of people that have had a fairly tragic December on the way through, and there's some families and communities that will be doing it tough for a while, and our thoughts are out there with those.
Absolutely. Now, thanks for your time on the Country Hour and Happy New Year's to you.
Oh, look, all the best. Thank you for that. And let's hope that 2026 can bring everything that everybody's looking forward to.
Digby Stretch, he's the new president of the PGA, and he was sounding pretty optimistic about next year and the direction he'll be taking the PGA in. 17 past 12.
This is the WA Country Hour with Georgia Hargreaves on ABC Radio WA.
Well, it's official. Western Australia's 2025-26 grain harvest is the largest ever. The Cooperative Bulk Handling Group has now received more grain than the previous record of 22.9 million tonnes. Mick Dore is CBH's Chief Operations Officer. Mick, that's quite an achievement, isn't it?
Georgia, it's been a massive year again, and, you know, it's a huge achievement from everyone involved in receiving and, you know, making the crop, getting the crop into the bin. So, yeah, it's awesome. We're, you know, now over 23 million tonnes and still got a few tonnes rolling into the bin. So, yeah, it's great.
Yeah, so is there much more still to come?
Well, it's a really interesting question. We look at quite a bit is how many more tonne to come. So we expect it to go somewhere, you know, north of 24 million tonnes. So, yeah, probably another million and a bit. But, yeah, things are finishing off pretty quickly around the state.
So when did it become apparent that it was going to be a record crop? Because at the start of the year, not everyone was feeling confident about the season.
Yeah, we started looking in March. So we had some good early rains, particularly in the southern part of the state. And we put together a bit of a plan to increase some of our storage around the place. And, you know, we've gone and executed that during the year. We ordered some more equipment to help us with receival of the crop. And then as the season, you know, progressively got better, we upped the number of storages and the amount of tons or the amount of extra bulkheads we built to cater for that. So, yeah, we started planning early, notwithstanding, you know, the later part of the year, it continued to get better and look a lot better. And it has been. So it's been great.
So in terms of receivals this season, which zone has been the standout?
Well, I think all the zones, so probably the three regional zones, Geraldton, Albany and Esperance, have all exceeded their records. Kwinana zone is close, but we'll probably tick over that in the next couple of weeks. But, yeah, probably the Geraldton zone has been the surprise. We've probably underestimated that a little bit, but the southern part of the state, Albany and Esperance, have looked good all year. And, you know, we've seen Esperance close to 4 million tonne and Albany have actually just ticked over 5 million tonne, which is amazing.
Wow, that is amazing. Now, I know obviously with things being very busy this year, some farmers were getting a bit frustrated with delays at the bins, but overall, how do you think you handled the biggest crop ever?
Yeah, look, overall, I think it's been handled extremely well. The team out there have done an amazing job in the conditions that they've worked in. you know, to get the crop in. Like you said, there's been some delays, but overall the feeling is generally really positive, and growers have expressed that. And yeah, like I say, the last bit where we've got a bit tight has slowed up a little bit in some areas, but yeah, generally been really pleased and you know, extremely proud of what the team have been able to achieve.
Let's talk quality now. How would you summarise it this year? How's quality been?
Yeah, again, the quality's been really good. We've had one, you know, probably significant rainfall event during harvest, which is generally what brings the quality down. That didn't impact it too much. So, you know, we've had a really good harvesting season from a weather point of view. So, yeah, the quality has come in, you know, what everyone would expect. We've had, you know, very few issues from a downgrade point of view across all the commodities. So that's been pleasing, and that's also sort of helped us with the receiving the crop the way we have.
Now, we have heard some criticism from farmers about CBH's new visual analysis sampling tech that came in this season. How did it go from your perspective?
Yeah, again, this is a new bit of technology that we've been working on for the last few years, and you know, this year we rolled it out across the southern part of the state. We ended up with 9.2 million tonne going through the system, and you know, when you look at that in context, it's performed really well. We have had some people sort of raise some queries around it, but you know, overall, it's performed the way we expect it to perform, and we'll continue to work with it and you know, work out how we roll that across the state. But generally, we're really happy with it.
So, do you think those machines that use AI tech are picking up more downgraded grain than previous years?
No, I think the idea of the machine is to be consistent, and that's probably the key. You know, you will get the same result no matter what site you go to. You know, previously with human sampling, you do get inconsistencies, and I think that's what we're finding with the machine being consistent. That's probably what's come out as a result of that, and that's exactly what we set out to achieve.
So with all that in mind, are they here to stay? Will they become the new norm across all sites?
Yeah, look, we'll do a review after harvest. Like we said, we've, you know, almost half the state's grain has been through it this year, and then we'll look at what that means for the rest of the state and how we can roll it out. And yeah, but the plan is to continue to roll those out, and whether that's going to happen in 1 or 2 years, we'll make that call in the next month or two.
And just out of interest, do these machines result in job losses, or have they?
No, it's just a more efficient sample hut. It's what we're aiming to look at, and you know, continue to make sure that we get trucks through, you know, as efficiently as possible at all our sites.
Now, yesterday, WA Farmers CEO Trevor Whittington offered his thoughts on a recent article in The Australian about CBH formalising a strategy to cope with a possible and even probable takeover from Macquarie, which is increasing its stake on GrainCorp, the largest grain handling organisation in the eastern states. Now, I know this isn't quite in your brief, Mick, but you've been with CBH for a long time now. You know a lot of the farmers and the sentiment and everything like that. So do you think there would be any hope of getting 75% of CBH grower shareholders to agree to a takeover from Macquarie or any other financial institution?
Look, it's an interesting one. And you said you've been here a little while, and I guess, you know, it seems to come around every 7 or so years about this time of the year, this debate or this discussion comes up. And, you know, I guess what I'd say is, you know, for us at the moment, our focus is on making sure the supply chain is efficient. And, you know, one of the things probably haven't touched on is the outloading piece for us, and, you know, making sure that we can, you know, while we get the crop in, it's as important to get it out. And, you know, the capital and the strategy we've got is really focused on that. And that's a critical piece for growers of WA to make sure that, you know, the receivables and the export components of the supply chain are operating efficiently. And, you know, we'll do another 2.2 million tonne of exports out of the system in December, which, you know, is a massive achievement as well. And, you know, for me, that's really where we need to continue to focus and make sure that, you know, WA growers continue to have the best supply chain in Australia.
Mick, thanks for coming on to the Country Hour today.
No, thanks very much.
CBH's Chief Operations Officer, Mick Dore. So CBH has now received over 23 million tonnes of grain this season, which is a new record. Very exciting times. It is 25 past 12. If you're just tuning in, this is the WA Country Hour on ABC Local Radio. Now, I've just seen this text come through from Anonymous saying, how many members does the PGA have? Well, look, in the past, we have asked previous PGA President Tony Seabrook that question, and unfortunately, we've never been given a specific answer. Thanks for that text. Please remember to pop your name and location in if you are texting in. 0448 922 604 is the number if you'd like to be a part of the conversation. Now, the head of Southern Ports says he's feeling positive about the future after signing an agreement this month to increase lithium exports out of Esperance. Southern Ports Esperance had a troubled 2024-25 financial year, with their three biggest customers by volume going into care and maintenance. But CEO Keith Wilkes says with new owners at the helm of one of those projects and several new opportunities in the pipeline, 2026 is looking good.
Yeah, so we obviously had previously had a record year of just a touch over a million tonne of spodumene lithium ore, and that dropped down to about 700,000 tonnes last year. And we obviously just made an announcement of signing an MOU with Global Lithium to explore the supply chain through Port of Esperance for their project, their Manon project.
So what would that mean for the port?
Well, I mean, the announcement talked about 240,000 tonnes of spodumene ore coming back through the port, and that would nearly take us back up to a record export year for that particular commodity. But what it means is that further diversification, again, of our customer base and our commodity base. We'd go back to having two spodumene exporters through the port, which is great. What we see is individual mines might come and go over time, but there's always room for good quality, low cost, high grade materials to be exported from our port.
And obviously, geography plays a significant role here, Keith, being that a lot of those deposits are quite close to the Esperance port, but also close to the Bunbury port as well. And I think between the two, at one stage, you've been first and third worldwide in terms of exports of tonnage of lithium and spodumene. Does it sort of feel like you do have some expertise there that you can draw on, as you say, as things do come and go?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we've got multiple spodumene exporters across those two ports exporting. I think Bunbury was a record export last year of spodumene, about 1.8 million tonne, and I think we'll be nudging that again in FY26. So what it means is we've got the assets set up suitable for those customers, multi-customer for the same product. And in Esperance, we've invested into our assets for that supply chain that suits spodumene. For example, we had to concrete the floor of our shed in Esperance to accommodate the product.
How much effort and emphasis do you put on that lithium trade? Because we know the market, it's not where many were hoping it would be. I mean, in the last week, Albemarle sort of dashed hopes of a processing plant revival and Talison ruled out a rail link due to the current economics. Does it worry you, the outlook for the market?
Well, that's what I mentioned before about good quality mines that have quality product at a good price, so on the cost curve. And if you can have those outstanding deposits like Greenbushes for Talison, then you are still going to have a viable market for these products. I mean, we're still using lithium, it's just the price is not that great in a global context.
Southern Port CEO Keith Wilkes, he was speaking with Tara DeLandgraft after signing a Memorandum of Understanding agreement this month to increase lithium exports out of Esperance. It's 29 past 12, time for an update from the newsroom. Kelsey Reid is here in the Karratha studio. Kelsey, what's making news headlines today?
Hey, Georgia. Severe weather warnings have been cancelled for northern WA communities impacted by ex-tropical cyclone Hayley. The Weather Bureau says heavy rainfall is no longer expected, but moderate rain may continue. The ex-tropical cyclone was downgraded to a tropical low this morning after making landfall on the Kimberley coast as a Category 3 yesterday. The CEO of a remote community says residents woke up to significant damage, with power lines down and trees uprooted. 125 firefighters are continuing to battle a bushfire which was burning at emergency level northeast of Bunbury in WA's southwest overnight. The blaze around Benja was burnt through more than 300 hectares in an area near a lithium refinery. It stayed at the highest warning for most of the night and is now a watch and act. The blaze, which has been burning since Monday, is contained but not controlled. Also making news, former Australian cricketer Damien Martin is in hospital in a serious condition after falling ill at his Gold Coast home on Boxing Day. It's understood the 54-year-old was diagnosed with meningitis and is in an induced coma in a Queensland hospital. Martin played 67 test matches for Australia and 208 one-day internationals. And the first female skipper to win the Sydney to Hobart says she hopes her achievement can inspire other women in the sport. Min River made history with female co-skippers Jian Lang and Alexis Loizen becoming the first double-handed yacht to become the overall race winner. For news anytime, visit our website abc.net.au/news or tune in at 1pm.
Thank you for the update, Kelsey. It is 29 to 1 on the Country Hour. Time to get an update from the Bureau of Meteorology. Caroline Crow is here today. Caroline, starting in the north of the state, what's the latest with ex-tropical cyclone Hayley, and what can we expect in terms of rainfall across that region?
Yeah, good afternoon. As you mentioned, ex-tropical cyclone Hayley is now below tropical cyclone strength. It is sitting in sort of western central parts of the Kimberley and is continuing to bring some rainfall through to the areas. Since 9 a.m. this morning, we've had some isolated falls around the 30 millimetre mark. As it progresses, it is going to gradually move towards the east and that Northern Territory border over the next 12 hours or so. Associated with ex-TC Hayley, as it moves through the Kimberley, we could see some moderate fall still during today. So looking at sort of around could see sort of another 30 to 50 millimetres in some locations, and possibly some isolated heavier falls than that. And then it will, coming into Thursday, rainfall total should be a little bit less, and we will start to see it gradually progress out of the Kimberley. So it's really today and then sort of coming into Thursday where we'll see the rainfall associated with the system, and then after that for the Kimberley we will be returning more towards our wet season activity with the showers and thunderstorms through the Kimberley.
And what's in store for the rest of those northern forecast districts? What can we expect?
Yeah, so for the remaining parts of the north and the east, there are showers and thunderstorms. So outside that area that are associated with ex-tropical cyclone Hayley, there's showers and thunderstorms through the remaining parts of the Kimberley, getting right through northern and the northern and eastern half of the interiors, through most parts of the Pilbara, getting down into the western parts of the Gascoyne as well. So that's sort of the rainfall area today. Outside that, mostly sunny for the remaining northern and eastern parts, and those winds are generally from that southeasterly direction. As we progress into Thursday, those thunderstorms are really going to extend through most parts of the northern half of the state, so continuing through that Kimberley region, through most parts of the interior, through the Pilbara, the Gascoyne, and getting into the northern half of the goldfields as well. As we progress into Friday, it's associated with trough, and we see that trough just move inland from the west coast through those northern parts. So we'll see those showers and thunderstorms just move away from those west coastal parts and sort of be more of a line. If you're drawing a line from sort of the Onslow or Exmouth area, but not including sort of that coastal Onslow Exmouth area, right down through to, let's say, Esperance, east of that line is where the thunderstorms are looking on Friday. And then as we progress into Saturday and Sunday, we do start seeing a little bit more further west eastward contraction and also northward contraction of those showers and thunderstorms. Most of the rainfall associated with the showers and thunderstorms will be through the northern parts. As you get into the showers and thunderstorms, those ones a little bit further south probably see some little or not too much rainfall associated with them.
And what can we expect further south of the state?
Yeah, for the Southwest Land Division, generally through the forecast period is easterly winds. They will tend a little bit more northeasterly coming into the next couple of days. So it is drawing down heat into the Southwest Land Division as well. So looking at sort of today, tomorrow for the west coastal parts probably being the warmest, but that heat does get right into most parts of the Southwest Land Division and close to the south coast, the coastal east-southeasterlies will keep sort of that Albany and sort of parts along that south coast there a little bit cooler, but the heat's going to get right down sort of into the southwest land division, the southwest and into the Great Southern as well, sort of peaking potentially on Friday and then again possibly again on Sunday as well for that southwest corner, and northeastern parts are sort of just going to be quite hot and getting into the 40s potentially Friday and Sunday as well. With that trough and those extending further south, as I mentioned, those thunderstorms for the northern eastern parts are going to extend into the Southwest Land Division as well. Coming into Thursday, the most likely area is looking more through the northeastern parts of the Southwest Land Division and possibly in the southwest corner as well. Little to no rainfall associated with these thunderstorms as progressing through. Coming into Friday, we do start seeing the eastward movement of the thunderstorm, so those they will be more confined to the eastern parts of the Southwest Land Division. Far northeastern parts are coming into Saturday for the thunderstorms, with it becoming more of a clearing trend for the remaining parts, and then not expecting any weather as we progress into Sunday, with all the thunderstorms expected to remain further north.
Thank you for the update, Caroline. It is 24 to 1. You're listening to the WA Country Hour. Now, Richard Hudson, can you run us through the rainfall totals?
Yeah, I can, but just a quick forward promote. DFAS has just issued a watch and act for a fire in the Shire of Northam and the Shire of York. So that's around the Wilberforce and Muresque area. I'll go through the details of that very, very shortly. But the rain in the Kimberley, just doing 10 and above. Bedford Downs had 14 mils, Charnley River 36, Curtin Airport 62, Cygnet Bay 108, Dubisa 58, Derby 41, Fitzroy Crossing 28, Gibb River 12, Gogo Station 15, Kachana 33, Kilto Station 25, Lansdowne 31, Leopold Downs 40, Liveringa Station 41, Lombardina 132, Margaret River Airstrip 24, Marion Downs 11, Mount Amherst 13, Mount Barnett 25, Mount House 42, Mount Krause 29, Mount Winifred 41, Old Mornington Homestead 32, Parry Creek Farm 34, Siddons Creek 12, Sturt Creek 24, Theta 29, Troughton Island 35, Truscott 19, Udiala 17, Winjana Gorge had 42, Yampi Sound 126, and Yulumbu recorded 40 mils. In the Pilbara, Coolawonya 42 mils, Mount Stewart had 9, and Parabidoo Airport had 8. There was no rainfall of any significance for the rest of the state. But due to the risk of fire, a few shires have just issued a total fire ban for today. So Chapman Valley and Northampton have just imposed a total fire ban. If you don't know what you can and can't do during a total fire ban, it is pretty obvious. You can't do anything that can start a fire, basically. But if you want to check on the details, go to the Emergency WA website and total fire bans are there on the homepage. Click on your shire or click on one of them. Tells you what you can and can't do. Tells you you can't do things like metalwork, grinding, welding, etc. Now, as far as I'm aware, there are no harvest bans in place today, but tomorrow, being New Year's Day, not a great day to harvest. So fires and hangovers don't go well together. Most shires do impose a harvest ban on New Year's Day. If in doubt, though, check with your shire. No one wants to be fighting fires on New Year's Day. Now, as I mentioned, DFAS has just issued a watch and act for some people in the Shire of Northam and in the Shire of York. This is in the Wilberforce and Muresk area. So it's for people in an area bounded by Wilberforce Road, the Avon River, Northam York Road and the intersection of Carter Road in Wilberforce and Muresk. So there is a possible threat to lives and homes as that fire is burning in the area and conditions are changing. If your plan is to leave, leave now in a northerly direction towards Northam or a southerly direction towards York. Take your emergency kit with you. It should include AM, FM radio that runs off batteries, first aid kit, woolen blanket, phones, protective clothing, medication, etc. If you're going to stay, make sure you're mentally and physically ready. Make sure you've got protective clothing, an independent water supply, and make final preparations now and start patrolling your property to put the spot fires out. So firefighters are actively fighting that fire. Aerial support has been sent to assist the ground crews, and the Shire of York is managing that particular fire. If you need more details, again, just search Emergency WA, and it's at the very, it will be at the very top. If it's not there now, it'll be there very soon. And also, it'll be on the Emergency WA app. So just repeating again, a watch and act has just been issued by DFAS in the Shire of Northam and the Shire of York for anyone around the Wilberforce and Muresk area. Obviously, keep listening to ABC local radio for any updates as well. Whilst we're talking fires, Bushfire Watching Act is still in place just south of Perth in the city of Rockingham. It's for those in parts of Waikiki and Warnborough. And a Bushfire Watching Act is also still in place in the Shire of Harvey. So that's for those in parts of Wellesley, Parkfield, Benja and Wokalup. That's the one we've been covering for the last couple of days. And that last one I mentioned was a bit of a concern for DFAS. So that was referred to as the Wellesley fire. It was at the highest emergency warning level for a fair while. It's been downgraded to a watch and act. This morning, Assistant Commissioner for DFAS, Stuart Wade, praised the firefighters for doing a great job overnight, putting in containment lines. That fire is now stationary, contained but not controlled. It has burnt 315 hectares. Kylie Zarefa has a small property that was about 8 kilometres from the fire and says it was a pretty scary experience because of the animals they have. A number of properties in that area do have some animals. And she was pretty happy she had a fire plan.
It was a little bit stressful. It was a lot of planning and making sure that our fire plan was ready to go. To be honest, it was getting, making sure all the horses actually had everywhere to go, majority of which I was out cleaning troughs and paddocks, so thankfully it wasn't as close to us as what some of the neighbours were, and it wasn't coming to our direction. So with the neighbours that I have being so cool, calm and collected, I was able to stay pretty cool, calm and collected, so it was a bit of a cheat. However, we were prepared if it did come through. Obviously, you kind of get a little used to large fire calls, and so I wasn't expecting to walk out the front door and be able to see the large fire from the house. So then the smoke sort of came over and filled the whole farm. The night before, I think it was probably the scariest because you could see all the live flames and you could actually see each flame going up. And then the next day, the smoke obviously came in and the winds changed, but we were pretty lucky over here to be quite safe the whole time.
Yeah, and what's kind of in that area that it got close to, and I guess we might find out, you know, later in the day what's happened in that area?
A lot of horse properties, a lot of small farmers. There is some high-intensity farming through there and farming families, but you're mainly just going to find farmers, small horse people. By the end of the day, it had to do some serious backflips to get back through us. Earlier in the day, it was quite gnarly. All we needed is one shift of wind or even some hot ash. We had ashes dropping over us all day, so it was kind of like flying in ashes. And even just one of them with the season that we've got quite a lot of high feed for the time of year it is. Yeah, it was quite scary that it was going to start other side fires as well.
How many animals do you have on your property, and who was there yesterday?
You should never ask a girl these type questions. I myself have around 30 horses and ponies. I've only got a light amount of cattle and livestock. I've probably got around 20 mixed livestock pets. I've got around 30 cattle, and then the neighbouring property it's joined with us, they would probably have around 300 cattle, rodeo horses, bucking horses, etc. So there's actually around 60 horses next door. That's one of my concerns, was once we've got ours out, we have to actually start evacuating all their animals.
Wow. So did you try, did you start evacuating your animals?
No, we've actually been preparing for this for years. I actually met next door from a fire on his property.
Mm-hmm.
We've been preparing for years. So we've actually set the whole entire properties up with laneways the whole way, so we can actually just move all the animals into a laneway. And we do a muster style where we just jump on horses each side and push them down to cattle yards. We load onto a truck. So I'm very lucky that I don't have to panic, because we have such a good plan.
How are you feeling today?
I've woke up with McDonald's and chocolate. I'm feeling great. a little exhausted, which is quite surprising. You don't realise how much of an effect it has on you when it doesn't happen, like, you know, it hasn't come our way, but you're quite a lot exhausted because it's just a constant, panic mode, I guess. You're getting ready to evacuate your house and home, and hope to God you can get all the animals on the truck. So, yeah, so you start going through the day working out who's going to get on a truck and who you're going to lose. So it's a pretty hard day, even if it doesn't come through. And having this many animals is a bit silly. Sorry.
And can you see anything from the fire now? We can't see the smoke plumes from when we are anymore, but what about you?
Let me just step out my back door, because that's exactly where it is. Oh, look, it's beautiful out there. So there's a little bit of smoke happening. You can't really tell. It's not that thick. It's blending with the sky down here. But no, there's some smoke, but nothing even substantial. You would not know the.
Oh, it sounds like it's looking heaps better then. Is there anything else that you think it's important to add?
I guess just, no matter how small a farm you've got, do your fire plan. It would have saved so many people's houses yesterday.
Kylie Zarefa speaking with Jackie Lynch about a close call yesterday when that fire in the Shire of Harvey came pretty close to their property and their livestock. Now, that fire came pretty close to Albemarle's lithium mine as well, but Harvey Shire President Michael Campbell says luckily there was very little damage to properties and infrastructure.
Yeah, listen, I had a briefing at 8 o'clock this morning, and I've heard that there's been no reported infrastructure damage, so that's really great. Predominantly just bushland area, which is also difficult to work in. So, fortunately no infrastructure damage reported to date. There were some community members in Binningup who made the decision to leave, which is great, and some were prepared to stay, and I can only assume that they had their evacuation plan all sorted, and they were quite happy to stay and defend if they needed to.
Does this raise any concerns about, sort of, with Bonington on Christmas Day and now the these fires here, with mine sites being so close to bushfires, is there any concern about their safety plans or that enough is in place to keep everyone safe?
Yeah, I think that in regards to Albemarle, we're fortunate that they were in a maintenance mode, I believe, so they had less staff on site, and they evacuated quite quickly, so well done to them. And I know that there were some businesses that were working in the Binningup area as well, and they stood down their workers and sent them home, so very responsible actions. And I would suggest that the mine site, particularly the Albemarle one, which was probably in the centre of this particular fire, were very well organised. Yeah.
Given the Shire's history with Yarloop 10 years ago, do you think that people are better prepared here?
Yeah, I think so. We've learnt some really good lessons out of Yarloop, and I feel confident that the community is very well prepared. And I think we saw that through the Facebook messaging as well. There were lots of community members that were happy to reach out and assist where we can or where they can. So that was great to see. The Emergency WA app, I mean, that's very well publicised. That's the go-to keep up to date in what's happening. So strongly encourage people to download that app if they haven't. And I suppose if they haven't got an emergency plan in place now, they certainly will. Yeah. I just wanted to say thank you very much, of course, to all of our volunteers. They've done it hard over the last few days. I know that some have been up to Boddington and now they're working on our local fire here, to DFES, all DBCA and our community as well for stepping up and assisting and doing the right thing. So thank you, everybody.
Harvey Shire President Michelle Campbell speaking to Madigan Landry about the fire that was at an emergency warning level for hours yesterday. There are about 150 volunteer and career firefighting crews still tackling that fire. So that includes crews from State Emergency, Parks and Wildlife, St John WA, WA Police and the Shire of Harvey, all supporting the incident management team. 10 to 1 on the Country Hour this afternoon, and the last live export ship for 2025 sailed out of Darwin this week, bound for Indonesia, capping off what's been a big year for the live cattle trade. Patrick Moran from the NT Livestock Exporters Association says they exported about 450,000 head, which is close to a record, and demand from Indonesia continues to grow.
That's the bright spot, is that there's no sort of end in sight as far as demand. The Indonesian government has a very ambitious free nutritious meals program, and just last month we had the ambassador, the Indonesian ambassador in Darwin, reiterating the fact that they will basically take as many cattle as we can give them. So that's what we're working towards, and there's no reason to think that next year won't be better than this year.
And so the last ship went out on Monday night. I always assumed boats had to be delivering cattle into Indonesia before January 1.
No, there's no arbitrary deadline.
Right, with the permits.
January deadline. Okay. The permits are good technically till the end of the year. There was some talk that the Indonesian government might roll over permits. So if importers had excess capacity, they could use that into January. I haven't really heard that that's happened on the ground. So we're sort of in the normal permit stance, which is that they should be released mid-January.
Right. That's the understanding at the moment?
That's our understanding.
Yeah. So are you expecting any boats to go out between now and the middle of Jan?
It's unlikely unless permits are issued, say, in the next week, because just the realities of booking ships and getting together cattle and that sort of thing.
So the live export trade can actually have a small break?
Yes. And I think it's a well-earned break this year. It's been a very busy year. And as you said, I know Ace and Frontier were working up until, Boxing Day and the day after. So they deserve a break.
How do you think 2026 is shaping up?
Yeah, look, it's an exciting time for livestock export, for cattle in the top, and the cattle industry in the top end. I think everyone is optimistic. Like we said, Indonesian demand's good. However, there are some risks to the industry. Biosecurity is an ongoing risk. We deal with that day in, day out. It's always a concern. And more than that, regulation is sort of another thing that can really have a devastating impact on the industry.
Have you been able to load boats at night yet and get biosecurity ticks?
So since 2023, the federal department basically banned biosecurity inspections on livestock vessels at nighttime. Now, the impact of that is if a boat gets into the wharf after sunset, it cannot be inspected, therefore it cannot be loaded. So it basically just sits at the dock for 12 hours. It's been a huge barrier on sort of growing the trade and moving past sort of the numbers we saw this year. So if we want to load more cattle, we need to take away those artificial barriers. Currently, there's a review being done by the department on whether biosecurity inspections can be completed at nighttime. And Matt, as you know, those boats inside are lit up like a skyscraper. So I, for the life of me, cannot figure out why it would make any difference whatsoever whether the inspection was done at night or during the day.
So you might get some answers in 2026, maybe.
So we're told that in February, the department will release its review, okay. And at that point, we should have a decision.
Patrick Moran. He is the CEO of the NT Livestock Exporters Association. And he was chatting to Matt Brann after the last live export ship for 2025 sailed out of Darwin this week. 6 to 1 on the Country Hour this afternoon. Now, I'm interested to know, what's the oldest or strangest thing you've got stored in your shed? Maybe it's a vintage Coca-Cola collection, or maybe some tribal tools allegedly used to scalp victims. They're just a couple of the thousands of items in Kevin Green's shed at his place in Donnybrook, which is in Western Australia's southwest region. And for the first time, he is opening his doors to the public. And just a warning, a couple of swear words coming up.
Well, people walk in and they go to the first room and they look around and they go, shite, where'd you get all this? And when half an hour we finish, they go to walk out the door and you say, where are you going? They say, well, I love your collection, but we're finished. No, 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 you haven't. So then they come in here and they nearly have heart attacks. Then they go in the other half and nearly have a heart attack. It's just a joy to collect. We collect... not to make money. We sell the odd little things to buy something else. We are not a business. We've declared it to the government because we're on a pension. We don't make money out of it. But just thoroughly to see people's faces when they look and go, oh, shit, I remember that. You know, and, oh, I had one of those. And we're sick of hearing about Nandis. So the kids get a skip bin in, chuck everything in the house in the skip bin, smash everything, Nan's stuff she loved, and then just looking for the gold and jewellery and any bit of money they can get. They don't give a shit. So that's why I went into cleaning sheds, yards and all that sort of gear, because I've got some good collectibles for a lot of collectors and myself and my son and everyone, and we just love it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a passion.
So when did you first get into it?
Like, I think I was about 2 years old. We lived in Cowell, and because everything was precious when we were young. We sold cool drink bottles. We sold rags. We'd go and raid bins for old shirts and that. You'd get threepence a pound for them. Cool drink bottles. We'd be going back to Cowell. Dad'd stop out of Cowell. All the kids would get out and say, right, I get your pocket money, and we'd run up and down the road on the Kalgoorlie Road. There'd be beer bottles, cool drink bottles everywhere because they used to just throw them out the window. We'd get our big bundle, go into Cal, cash it at the deli, had our chalk top and everything out. We had our money, and that's how we earned it. It wasn't given to us. So that's why I was brought up to appreciate old. I really do. I mean, I even like my old mother-in-law. She's very nice.
That was Kevin Green. He was speaking to Pip Waller about his amazing collection of stuff that he's collected over the last 70 years. And all of that stuff is in his sheds in Donnybrook, which is a few hundred kilometres south of Perth. His collection includes West Coast Eagles AFL memorabilia, hundreds of toy cars, a telephone booth from Carradale, an extensive range of Titanic items produced from an auction in Boyanup. There's so many things there. If you want to have a sneak peek, just search ABC and Southwest and you'll find Pip's story and you'll get to see some of the photos of what it looks like in his sheds. And I do recommend you do that because it is just very impressive. Now, it's 2 minutes to 1 on the Country Hour. Just very quickly, Richard Hudson, could you give us a recap of that watch and act in the Shire of York?
Yeah, I certainly can. And also apologies for the few little swear words there. I'll cop that one. I decided to leave them in. So if you're unhappy, express your unhappiness at me. Yeah, that fire, it was only reported at around 20 minutes to midday. So this is the one in the Shire of Northam and in the Shire of York. So DFAS have issued a bushfire watch and act for that particular fire. It's around the Wilberforce and Muresk area for people in an area bounded by Wilberforce Road, the Avon River, Northern York Road and the intersection of Carter Road in Wilberforce and Muresk. Obviously, some people who would normally be in that area may not be at the moment. They might be in Perth. If you know someone in that area, maybe you want to give them a tinkle because they might not have heard it. So if your plan is to leave, leave now in a northerly direction towards Northam or a southerly direction towards York. So firefighters are actively fighting that fire. Aerial support has been sent to assist the ground crews. And just a reminder, please do not fly a drone or a model aircraft or a multi-rotor near bushfires. If you do, it can jeopardise the aerial support that have been sent in to fight those fires. Let's hope they can get that one under control pretty quickly.
Thank you for that update, Richard. Yes, a good reminder about the drones. I'm not sure that that's something everyone knows. Anyway, thank you for your time on the Country Hour this afternoon. And if you've got plans tonight, stay safe, take care. I'll be back with you again on the Country Hour tomorrow in the new year. Time for the news, 1 o'clock.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.